theology and theologian, you will understand that it is a bit tough to call Buddhism theologian. In the dictionary, you find theology a science which treats the facts and phenomena of religion. A theologian is one learned in theology. So that word science more rings a bell, science of God. Certainly something that Prabhupada talked about very often. There's one short paragraph he mentions four times, Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the science of Krishna, the absolute personality of Godhead, whom we have preliminary information from the text of the Bhagavad Gita. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said that anyone, regardless of what he is, who is well versed in the science of Krishna, can become an authorized preacher or preceptor in the science of Krishna. There's a need for the science of Krishna in human society for the good of suffering humanity, the world, and we simply request the leaders of all nations to pick up the science for their own good. Even more literally, Theo means God, and just like in so many words, when you add O-G-Y, it means the science of God. Prabhupada used to even translate Kiva Vipra Kivinasi Shuddha Kenina, a Krishna type of it. Whoever knows the science of Krishna is a guru. And that word is also a science word, is used by the Kiva of all sciences, and the spiritual science itself. But Prabhupada was not a Western academic or speculative theologian. He criticized them. The word theologian occurs in one translation like that, in the prayers of Vritrasura, the Lord. He says, many modern theologians argue about right and wrong without knowing what is actually right. Their arguments are always false, and their judgments inconclusive because they have no authorized process with which to gain knowledge of you. Because their minds are agitated by scriptures containing false conclusions, they are unable to understand the truth concerning you. Furthermore, because of polluted eagerness to arrive at the right conclusion, their theories are incapable of revealing you or transcendental to their material concern. So that would fit the more speculative approach of the study of the science of God without actually practicing it, or even believing personality of Godhead. Vritrasura criticizes those. So there are bona fide teachers of the science of God and otherwise. When Prabhupada was taking his morning walks at the same time in Los Angeles when he was having all those talks with Srup Damodar, he would invite Srup Damodar. Scientist, what do the scientists say? He had a smaller version of that with another devotee, Prajapati, and he would say to him, he would call him Mr. Theologician. Is the theologician here? Prajapati would walk up, because he graduated from a seminary and studied theology. So what do they say? What do the theologician? And he was abreast of all different modern speculations like the God is dead theories and other kinds of theology. So he would tell all about different things. And usually it was atheistic and speculative nonsense, which was spoken by Mr. Theologian Prabhupada with the ethos. Even a lecture tape. Of course, Prabhupada didn't give those snappy titles, but they're Jagachika, I think. I take issue with some of those titles, but there's one title called Theologians Who Needs Them, and perhaps Prabhupada says something like that on the title. When he was talking, I think Yadavarapur went and caught this on film. Prabhupada was talking with different scholars of religion, like Stosa Judah and others in garden in Los Angeles. And at one point he asked them, what is God? And they didn't really know. And so he said that something like, you're not theologians then, you're theosophists. Srila Prabhupada was a theologian in the tradition of the great acharyas who studied shastras and guided the Vedic culture. He asked that question in Bhagavad Gita, if to surrender to Krishna means to be liberated and go back to Godhead, be a Maya, why don't the great scholars, teachers, leaders do so? He says those really learned leaders of society, like Brahma, Shiva, Kapila, the Kumaras, and later on Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Sri Chaitanya, many others who are faithful philosophers, politicians, educators, scientists, etc., surrender to the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-powerful authority. Those who are not actually philosophers, scientists, educators, administrators, but oppose themselves as such, not accept the path of the Supreme Lord. They have no idea of God. So especially these acharyas like Ramanujan and Madhva and Jiva Goswami, they're theologians. If we could roughly call a theologian in this tradition, Vaishnava tradition, a faithful devotee who's also a powerful philosopher, but doesn't philosophize independent of the scriptures, but does some original or timely thinking based on the scriptural conclusion. It's like Madhva and Ramanuja didn't do that. Actually, if you read them, they're very difficult to read. They're very intensely logical and philosophical and theologians. And in their case, especially arguing against Shankara's Mayavadi, entirely faithful. Jiva Goswami is called the greatest philosopher who ever was and will be by one. I think Sannyasi and Prabhupada quoted. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Nana Shastra, Vichara, Naikin, and Pano, they very scrutinizingly studied all the scriptures and came up with the Siddhanta, especially of Krishna Bhakti. So, Prabhupada approved of a type of argumentation that was sometimes not exactly just pointing to what the scriptures say, but arguing according to logical strength. And he points this out, however, not as something to be done by itself, but it may be done, especially in the case when one is arguing with people who don't accept scripture. This comes up in the discussion about Lord Chaitanya's argument with the Buddhists who reject the Vedas. Prabhupada says that in ISKCON preaching, we may have to do this also. I'm sure most of you are familiar with that. Followers of Vedic principles understand this. However, here it is said that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu defeated the Buddhist philosophy by argument. Those who are preachers in ISKCON will certainly meet many people who believe in intellectual arguments. Most of these people do not believe in the authority of the Vedas. Nevertheless, they accept intellectual speculation or argument. Therefore, the preachers of Krishna consciousness should be prepared to defeat others by argument, just as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. Of course, the defect is mentioned in that verse, Tarko Pratishto Shukri Avivina, that if you just depend on your logical argument, sooner or later another champion will come and defeat you. And that's the history of philosophy, Western and also Eastern Munis. But the real truth is known, it's in the heart of the Mahajans who follow in simple succession. Using logic and reason, understand that ultimately we should accept Scripture. We'll talk more about that, the authority of Scripture. But now, I would like to discuss, under the topic of theology, some classical arguments for the existence of God that occur in Western theology, and see to what degree Prabhupada used these, or didn't use these. Because usually if you talk about a God-conscious theologian, you'll have to talk sooner or later about these proofs of the existence of God that he uses in an attempt to prove to the non-believers that it's not just a matter of faith, but that God is a true fact. So we'll see, this has been something that has gone on for centuries. These have been put forward and they've been refuted and they've been again defended, and it goes back and forth. I could say in advance that Prabhupada was definitely involved with these things in his own language, in his own form. And even when he heard some of the classical arguments, the arguments of St. Thomas Aquinas and others, he said that, yes, we honor these. So let's look at them a little bit. They're known by certain philosophical terms, and they have originators, and there are famous people who refuted them. I'll try to go over them briefly. And I've done research in just a couple of books, and I may be reading some explanatory passages or paraphrasing. The existence of God as a problem in the philosophy of religion or theology revolves around the theistic proofs. They continue to be the classic exercises of philosophical reason. Whether or not these arguments succeed in establishing their conclusion, or whether or not, supposing they do succeed, they are of any positive religious value, are disputed questions. The general conclusion is that they really don't prove God's existence, but they are of partial use and assistance. Which is, that's like when all the battle is over, back and forth, it's sort of like a draw in the end. And God hasn't been proved to the non-believer, but from the theist point of view, there's a definite use in these things. And I think Prabhupada would more or less take that position, that we certainly don't depend on these proofs, but that we use them, and they have a use in convincing or making probable suggestive arguments. But there are some religious philosophers who reject them, the proofs themselves, and find them to be like opposed to the religious spirit. One of them is the philosopher Kierkegaard. I think it's interesting why, although he was such a powerful philosopher and wanted to establish God consciousness, he thought these proofs are stay away from the proofs. But here's his comment. He said, "To prove the existence of one who is present is the most shameless affront. The existence of a king or his presence is commonly acknowledged by an appropriate expression of subjection and submission. What if in his sublime presence one were to prove that he existed? In my relationship to God, I have to learn to give up my finite reasoning." Man had to make the paradoxical leap into faith which could yield him an existential certitude in God. So, we'll find that Srila Prabhupada more actively employed these things, maybe in the spirit of anything can be used in the service of Krishna. Even the word science of God he partly used because of such current adoration of empirical science. Well, if they're worshipping that science, they should know that this is a science. Like, that's certainly present in a book like in the introduction to Easy Journey to Other Planets, which is dedicated to the scientists of the world. the people who do teach and advocate what they call natural theology, they feel that they have a religious mission. Natural theology means trying to establish God's existence by natural or logical reasons. And they feel that they have a contribution to make to theism. So it may seem to us sometimes dry or futile, but there is a religious spirit behind it. So now I'll go into briefly the theistic proofs. First one that we'll discuss is the argument from religious experience. And this is that the experience of many people who accept and believe in God itself constitutes a kind of proof. Prabhupada used this argument. He used to say that primitive people worship some form of God. And this is like, he would offer this as a kind of proof. Everybody worships God. And not only primitive people, but all the advanced sages in India accept God. But speaking personally, aside from testing the logical strength of this, some of them are more convincing to certain people than others. This has always been an important thing for me, and it was right from the beginning, making the step to being really committed and following Prabhupada. Just thinking that there were so many great teachers throughout history, like Buddha and Jesus Christ, and in India you've heard of so many great teachers, even if we didn't hear of Krishna yet. And then seeing Prabhupada, so many people worshiping God who you admire, itself constitutes a kind of proof. So naturally, the non-devotee doesn't believe he accepts that. And he has his logical argument against it. Now, in bringing up I think it's good to bring up the reputations to show in the end that we can't really depend entirely on these kind of proofs. You'll see what we depend on is Shastra. Not solely on these arguments. But it's also good because if we know the refutation and then have some sense of a counter-refutation, you don't get embarrassed when you just hear the refutation. So the argument for God's existence, this is the argument against this, implies a deity from evidence within our human experience. Therefore, it is classified as an argument which relies on a premise derived after experience. It was called in common language begging the question. A basic philosophical objection to all strict theistic proofs of the, how do you pronounce the Latin word? No, that's the other one. Posteriori? A posteriori. So this is considered, in fact all of them except one are considered a posteriori argument. Which means that unless you observe it, you can't know that it's true. So they're saying, well, we should know it's true before we have the experience of it. You're just saying because these people experience God, therefore there's God. So I have to experience God, and then I'll know there's God. But this is they call this a defect. The persons who accept these premises already acknowledge the reality of God. So. This is not like a knockdown argument to offer this to the atheist. Prabhupada, I reminded of the word he uses, stubborn. The atheists are stubborn. Sometimes we really think we're going to say something that will convince them, and they're just so stubborn. We're amazed, and in a debate sense, we're disarmed that they won't accept that. And he has no faith. So he won't accept that because many people believe in God, it means anything. Because he's so stubborn. Anyone who accepts the premise that if people have faith in God, therefore God exists, already either acknowledges God's existence or else is unable to reason. So this argument can only be a proof to those who need no proof. So now, all right, we say, all right, we see you're not going to be convinced, you're not knocked down by this argument, but whether people can be persuaded to accept this type of premise is another question, which leads to the discussion about the relative probability of these a posteriori arguments. And I'm going to discuss that more in in some of the next theistic proofs, but it has to do with the, again, relative value of these proofs rather than thinking that they're really going to, that God has been proven by these arguments. All right, going on to the next one, ontological proof. This was offered most prominently by Anselm, and later modified and changed and argued by Descartes. This claims, again on a priori, no, not again, but this is in fact the only of the theistic proofs which is a priori. A priori means it's not based on experience, it's just based on pure logic, just like mathematics is, and you accept it without it having to be observed. This claims on a priori grounds that, and here's a partial quote of how St. Anselm put it forward, the most perfect and real conceivable being, God, must exist, for a non-existent could never be the most perfect and real conceivable being. Part of God's perfection must be that he also exists. How could you conceive of God and think that he doesn't exist? The philosophical objection is that one is never entitled to deduce from a concept that anything exists which corresponds to the concept. Only experience can determine this. You can imagine $100, but nothing you can imagine will make them real. The philosophical objection is well developed and widely agreed. This is the only strictly a priori theistic proof. An a priori argument operates from a basis which is logically prior to and independent of experience. Now, did Prabhupada use the ontological argument? What do you think? Yes, he did. In a certain way. Prabhupada may have accepted the ontological proof that the most perfect being must exist, since non-existence could never be said to be the most perfect and real. However, he appears to have not seriously used the ontological proof on its own, because it rests upon purely logical considerations, whereas he rests on authority of Shastra. But Prabhupada did use some purely logical arguments, like extra ammunition. When he gave such arguments, he didn't develop, he didn't always back it up with Shastra. But for him, the serious proof was Shastra. This is more or less the same point. To Prabhupada, Shastric evidence is a priori, logically prior to and independent of experience. It's called aporisheya, and therefore it achieves the certainty exhibited by a successful a priori proof, the certainty of mathematic truth. In fact, Prabhupada would even say 2 plus 2 is 4 everywhere, and then he would state some Shastric claim. Vedic assertions resemble the ontological proof, of course. For example, a statement like Ekko Bahunam Yogadidati Kama, no one is greater than or equal to God, or God possesses in full all opulences. So these are Shastric, though, and not logical assertions. I think mostly we feel rather strange about the ontological proof. We don't feel that Prabhupada used it so much. There'll be two more proofs that when I state them, they'll be real familiar to you as Prabhupada preaching tools. But I couldn't think of so many examples of what I tried to do in researching this was understand the proof and then find somewhere in Prabhupada's writings examples of his preaching on this. He probably would have accepted the basic objection to the ontological proof that just thinking of a concept doesn't entitle you to claim its existence, but it depends on experience. So, actually, I didn't find any references, or my researchers didn't find them. So that in itself, I said yes, he did use it, but I think we could. It was not much used by him. Feeling my way through this lecture still. The next famous proof we'll go on to is the cosmological proof. This is was Aquinas' main proof. It's called the first cause argument. The first cause argument urges that either there is an endless and therefore meaningless regress of causes, or else the causal series must finally be anchored in an uncaused first cause, which is God. Skeptics arguing against this argument say that the universe doesn't necessarily need a cause other than itself. It follows that from their point of view, it begs the question. This is really an example where the stubbornness comes in, because to our understanding, with this little grain of metaphysical faith, is a very convincing argument that everything has a cause, so there must be cause to ultimately to everything. And the atheist says, why? Well, but then nothing has any meaning, so nothing has to have any meaning. So he refuses to accept what is very good evidence by not accepting any the premise that existence has to have a cause. So one of the scholar who is writing in a book called The Existence of God says, perhaps arguments of this cosmological type might be put to a more modest use. Instead of being offered as strict demonstrations, they can be presented as providing significant pointers, suggestive clues, probable arguments, appealing not to the principle of logical entailment, but to a less rigorous and more informal kind of reasonableness. This leads us to the subject of probability arguments for the existence of God. So, did Prabhupada use the cosmological argument? Yes. Everyone knows this. You were caused by your father, right? He was a living person. So he was caused by his father, he was caused by his father. If you go back and back, you'll find that there's original cause is the supreme person, Krishna. And here's another purport. Well, actually, this is a slightly different point. We've been listening to these skeptics saying, well, we don't accept that, we don't accept that. So Prabhupada argues that they are not in a position to deny, to make these arguments and to deny the existence of God because of their standing or their lack of standing to claim that the first cause is meaningless. He says in one purport, for every unknown thing, we have to inquire from a learned personality. The question of creation is also one of such inquiries to be made to the right person. The spiritual master, therefore, must be one who is sarvajna, as stated here and before in connection with Shukadeva Goswami. Thus all inquiries on God which are unknown to the disciple may be made from the qualified spiritual master. We have to examine the qualifications of the refuter or the philosopher. Prabhupada said in his philosophical discussion, is a man talking or is he a dog? Who's making the argument? I don't think Prabhupada goes on to say that one may be struck with wonder to see different creations and think that they have no cause. Similarly, the so-called scholars and philosophers of the world may present so many utopian theories about the impersonal creation of the universe, but an intelligent devotee of the Lord, by studying the Bhagavad Gita, can know that behind the creation is the hand of the Supreme Lord. Another place, he says, the actions and reactions carried out by the material nature are sometimes accepted as our scientific inventions, and we want to take credit for them and defy the existence of God. Another type of argument Prabhupada gives is that scientists take credit for the little things that they create, big airplanes, but the credit really, even for those airplanes and for everything else, should go to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sarvakarana Karana. He's the cause of all causes. Everything has to have a cause. He's the original cause. So that one, I think you'll agree, was used quite a bit by Prabhupada. Now here's another one. Teleological proof, or called the argument from design. The universe has a design, so it must have had a designer. The descent of the Lord into the atom and the universe indicates that without his presence, nothing could factually exist. Yeah, these are more calls me logical argument. Well, here's a theological argument with Crawford. Well, here's one. The flower has a beautiful design, and an artist paints the flower, and with his brain, but the artist can't make the flower as nice as the original flower. So how can we say that the flower has no brain to create it? The intricate and vast design of the universe must mean there's a designer. So although Prabhupada used it, philosophically speaking, this argument has met with a lot of refutation. This book on the existence of God states, there was a time when this was considered to be the strongest of all the theistic proofs, but that time is long past, and the arguments of Paley and others strike us nowadays as simplistic. There was especially a devastating argument by the skeptic David Hume against this. We won't go into the technicalities of it, but he said that the world is more like an organism than an artifact, and any design we might perceive in it that has arisen from an immanent source rather than a transcendent designer, and that's I may not have read that exactly right, but any design that we may perceive in it has arisen from an immanent source rather than a transcendent designer. And this theory has also suffered by the theory of evolution, which so-called shows that what superficially looks like purpose may be alternately explained as natural selection. So the theological argument has taken some hard blows, but has reappeared in more subtle ways by contemporary upholders. So this is a history of philosophy. Something is defeated, and someone tries to absorb all those arguments against it, and then come up with another defense of it. Again, commenting on the position of this logical argument, the argument from design is another type of cosmological argument. It differs from the first cause argument, which professes to be strictly demonstrative, in that it attempts to establish a high probability rather than a logical certainty. By directing attention to the order and beauty of nature and its apparently purposive character, and concluding that it is most adequately explained by postulating a divine creator, it is not claimed that the intellectual move from these starting points to God proceeds on the ironclad rails of logical entailment. There can be no strict deduction of an infinite deity from the character of finite things. Rather, these functions as significant signs and clues pointing in varying degrees of force to the reality of God. It seemed like Prabhupada did use it more or less like that. The result of this survey of the traditional theistic arguments is pretty much what we expected. These arguments fall far short of proof, but they are not worthless. As Hume seemed prepared to admit, the evidence for God is somewhat stronger than the evidence against. But even if it were much stronger, it would not produce believers. The function of the proofs is to show that the search for deity is not the vain pursuit of an illusion, but a rationally defensible quest. So, that's a brief trot through the proofs of the existence of God, and I thought it was interesting that we usually don't think of any connection to Prabhupada and Western theology or such things as proofs of the existence of God, but still within his own tradition and out of his own realizations of argument, without any perhaps studied connection, he readily did use cosmological and the theological argument, and the argument from religious experience, and as we saw, maybe not so much that ontological argument that God has to exist as part of his perfection. But if we're going to talk about Prabhupada as a theologian, his main emphasis was Shastra. And there are many explanations of why this is the main way to know God. I once, traveling with the library party in 1975, had an argument with a professor who, when I started discussing about Krishna consciousness, I started using a few analogies. And right away he said, no, this is not philosophy, don't talk in analogies. He wouldn't even listen to anything I said as soon as I gave an analogy. There you go, that's Indian philosophy, another analogy. But you can't prove anything by analogies. So I wrote to Prabhupada about it. And he not only explained about analogies, but the theology of how to know God being based not on logic, but on Shastra. He said, concerning our use of analogy, we do not bring in imperfect analogy, but we follow the instructions of the Shastra strictly. Our authority is on the basis of Shastra, not analogy. Our authority is Shastra. We give analogy for the general mass of people who have no faith in Shastra. Analogy is not proof. Shastra is proof. Foolish people cannot understand or accept, so we use analogy. The conclusion is not drawn from the analogy, but from the Shastra. We don't use a so the professor said, your philosophy seems to be a combination of Shastra and logic. So I said, is that true? And Prabhupada says, we don't use a combination of logic and authority, we use authority. Logic we use to convince someone who doesn't accept the authority. The basic principle is authority. Vedas say cow dung is pure, we accept it. There's no logic, but when we use it, we see that it's correct. The logic of using analogy is called in the Shastra Saka Chandra Nyaya. It is easier to focus on the moon through the branches of a tree. The moon is a great distance away, and you say that it is just through the branches, so you can focus more easily on the moon, because two points join make a straight line. So like even when Krishna says, just as in this body we change from youth to old age, so similarly soul takes another body. That's an analogy. So strictly speaking, by logic, it's not proven that because it happens in this life, it happens in the next life. The proof is Shastra. But the analogy certainly helps us to understand that. The Prabhupada says it's a good analogy, it's not a faulty analogy, but it's not the proof. The proof is the Shastra. So the process is Brahma Shabda. Because it's perfect, not like our imperfect selves who suffer from faulty senses, cheating, illusion, and mistakes. And because God is a subject matter beyond mental speculation, it can only be known by revelation from the scripture. And so this is one aspect of Prabhupada being strongly based on Shastra. Another, seeing him, this is a lecture devoted to one aspect of Prabhupada's theologian. We see him as an active theologian or arguer and as a Vaishnava against the Mayavadis. He doesn't so much face off with Descartes or Kant, although he did it in one book, but it's with the Mayavadis constantly. So all the Vaishnava teachers, they're not only lovers of God, but they're ready, when they're disturbed by the Mayavadis, to discuss with them the theology based on the Shastras of direct meaning, and defeat the word jugglery of the Mayavadis. Now another aspect of Prabhupada as a theologian was that he broke new ground for Vaishnava teachers. And one important area was, as he sometimes said, I'm the first one to challenge these scientists, the material scientists. So he left a whole legacy in this with his Bhaktivedanta Institute. And I'm not going to try to discuss their work. But just a little snatch of a conversation he had with Swarup Damodar in his last days. He's, Prabhupada says, they have taken God as something mystical, especially this rascal Darwin's theory. They've become like animals, and they're seeing everyone as animals. This theory is taken as the greatest principle of anthropology in the whole world. So scientists, by combined meaning, should speak out against this Darwin's theory. Swarup Damodar says, if we can get some big scientists on our side, at least a few, that will be enough. That I am asking, said Prabhupada. So he wanted to actually do this very ambitious thing with the logical arguments of his trained scientists, who, with faith and support of the Vedic knowledge, to defeat empirical science. When you think of what he's trying to do, and what the Bhaktivedanta Institute is trying to do, it's really shooting the rhinoceros, very, very brave. So now, I'd like to move on to the questions. I have some of my own, and I'm going to first quit, and then I'll ask you for some, as well as comments on how to improve this presentation. Well, here's the first question. If Prabhupada did not count on the logical proofs for God's existence as much as Shastra, and if his proofs were presented in a simple manner, and if these theistic proofs are subject to so much logical criticism, how shall we regard them and use them? Anyone want to answer? Krishna? Going to come forward here?
Well, two ways they can be used is that that they could be, one way is for devotees, they could be looked upon as explanations rather than as proofs to help us understand why something's true, like Krishna's own argument or his own analogy that he used in Dehena Smanyata Dehe. And another thing is that for preaching, they can convince less sophisticated people.
Right. Yeah, I have that down. I wrote an answer to that, yeah. Most people will accept them. And if we do meet a sophisticated skeptical challenge, then by hearing of these logical proofs, we can be aware that, he's refuting this. I know this argument does have some logical weaknesses. Whereas with most people, they'll listen and it'll be more convincing. So it can be used. And we can do it just like in general. We should go ahead and do it as Prabhupada did. He used them in a simple way, and most people will accept them. And like Prabhupada, it don't use them as absolutes. But we don't avoid them. Even if you're, if anyone is a little confused by this presentation, or thought, well, I couldn't follow these different arguments. I couldn't tell one from the other. What are they called? What's a priori? What's teleological? Actually, without knowing this, if you're doing any preaching, you are using these arguments because you've heard them from Prabhupada. So you'll go on doing so, whether you know what they're called or not. We do use them, but we should know their relative position.
Yeah. Because we're trained in reason and logic, and then we hear that ultimately we depend on Shastra, so the mind balks that it just sounds dogmatic.
That we don't use logic?
Yeah, it just sounds like, you see bumper stickers, the Bible says it, I believe it, that does it. But actually, then I thought of a verse in the Gita where Krishna says, this is Shastra now, he says, Rishi Bir Bhagadagi Tang Chando Bir Vidak Pratap Brahma Sutra Padaischaiva Hetuman Bhir Vinishchitai, which means that knowledge of the field of activities and the knower of the field is presented by various sages and various Vedic writings, especially in the Vedanta Sutra, and is presented with all reasoning as to cause and effect. So Shastra, it's that suggests that in Shastra we'll find plenty of logical ammunition to fight the bad logic.
Right.
So it's not just dogma you'll find in Shastra.
Right.
It's all reasoning as to cause and effect.
Hmm. Yeah, and especially with the intellectual giants, the Vaishnava theologians, you'll see even more logic. I had an exchange of letters with Gopi Puranadhanan, actually because I was trying to read that book on Madhvacharya, and it wasn't written by a devotee, a great scholar though, B.N.K. Sharma, and he was seen to be saying that Madhva respected the Shastras, but he really was like so much into logic that the Shastra wasn't absolute. And this would seem to be entirely different than what Prabhupada wrote to me in my letter. So I wrote to that to Gopi Prana, and he said, well, Prabhupada said that to you in the letter, but he was saying more like, he was like balancing with the other side, that actually these especially some of these acharyas, they did go forward very strongly on logic. And he made an interesting comment. He said that comparing the Vaishnava, the Gaudiya Vaishnava acharyas, and the Madhva. He said the Madhva acharyas, they seem to be somewhat better philosophers, and the Gaudiya Vaishnavas seem to be better devotees. So argumentation. Usually doesn't Prabhupada say that when we say argument and reason, it's on the basis of Shastra. You know, it's like to explain what one hit that the verse you quoted with reason and argument. But it would mean, and usually when you read these treatises, they refer to the scripture. You know, they're very technical, like commentaries on the Vedanta Sutra. They explain what did the verse actually say, and according to this scripture, and according to this Sanskrit phrase, it should be taken like this. And everyone agrees on the Shastra. And this person says, no, it's like this, according to the Shastra. And the other one says, no, according to the Shastra, it's like this. You've misinterpreted the Shastra. It's this. They're real theologians, basically. But they don't go outside of that, unless they're like non-theistic Buddhists and atheistic Sankhyas. But with our logic usually is according to the Shastra, not independent. But yeah, we not dogmatic. I think partly the answer would be that if you really study the Shastra, it's so scientific in itself and inconceivable that you can't. It's not a simplistic accepting of dogma, but everything is explained. Keshe-han.
There's one interview in the Science of Self-Revelation where Prabhupada's trying to make a simple point about how we're not the body and transmigration of the soul, and the interviewer refers to ask, well, what about the scriptures? I don't know if anyone remembers, but Prabhupada said, he was trying to say at that point, he says, don't bring up scriptures, we're just talking about, I don't know whether he said science or logic or reason, it seemed that in certain cases Prabhupada tried to keep, of course he's using arguments from the scriptures, but he didn't want to bring in that sectarian idea.
The religious idea, because he knows as soon as people say, so according to your faith, and right away they're ready to put him down. But he said, no, this is not faith. We're not talking religion. Let's just talk on logic. Yeah, but then his logic would be the Shastra. There's that Janaka says, when you're dealing with clever people, you have to be clever yourself. Yeah.
Also, in the beginning of the, I think it's an introduction of the series of Upanishad, where Prabhupada states that the Vedic literature is infallible because they we take their authority, because when they say that cow dung is pure, said, and we know that cow dung is pure, and therefore they're infallible because it's proven. Therefore, he's using logic there, that the Shastra, because it's coming from perfect source, is that
it doesn't depend on logic, but what is steady the Shastra. Therefore, to get back to your point that we appear learned and not fanatic, a learned discussion on the need to turn to Brahma Shabda, what it is, a perfect knowledge, the source of our knowledge, it always seems to me to be very important. Epistemology, where do you get your knowledge that you're saying this? That has to be asked of any person, not just us. And so the explanation, they'll say, well, I got my knowledge by direct perception, or I read this in the famous philosopher so-and-so. So we also say, well, I got it from the scripture. So then the next question is, well, let's examine that source of knowledge. So that's a gem, that Isopanishad beginning, and that can be expanded more, why we do accept the Shastra and why we don't accept the other pramanas, the anumana, pratyaksha. Those are really crucial areas for discussion. Devotees could expand on them to the satisfaction of modern intellectual mind. Yes?
It's also explained in by Prabhupada in the tape. He's talking to a devotee who is playing the role of a scientist. He's saying, no, our process is the same. You believe in some rascal, we believe in Krishna. And
yeah.
He's explaining that the process is actually the same.
And then examine the with Katovsky, said, you follow Lenin, we follow Krishna.
Yeah, that's it.
So then examine Lenin's credentials and who has accepted Lenin, how, what is his presentation, and then examine Krishna. So this is a way to stick to that principle of Shastra, not logic, but to make it intelligent. And use logical, as Keshi Hunt is saying, use logical arguments to get back to that point. Yes?
It would seem that in order to accept Shastra's authority, that it would have to be ascertained and verified that the Shastra is directly the voice of Godhead himself, who is the object of this seeking.
And that's the works of ordinary persons.
Right, it has to be ascertained that it's the Shastra is self-evident proof because it comes from the source of what we're trying to achieve in terms of our objective.
Yeah, that has to be expanded on. Yes.
So just like it says that you may learn law in order to go around the law, you can also use the Shastras to go against the Lord.
Yeah.
And as we see, since Madhvacharya refuting Shankara's monism with dualism, there's been a back and forth battle, you know, a theistic battle based on Shastra, how to interpret the Shastra to go either to prove that you should worship the Lord, or that there's no need because you are the Lord. So in other words, what it seems from that is that logic can be used, can be good or bad. And everyone is going to say, I have the good logic, and the other one is bad. But
right.
It's all very logical, one way or the other. It's all very logical. And the point, I think it should be made that, like it was just mentioned, authority. For example, when we draw analogies, they don't constitute proofs, but these analogies impress anyone only in as much as they have faith and they have a certain degree of submission. For example, Prabhupada draws an analogy means a picture, and the picture satisfies the mind and the soul. And because I see that this person is a gentleman or a Brahman, I feel drawn from my heart to accept it, to accept that authority. And of course, affection, love has to be mixed in it. It's not simply some forceful authority, but some loving authority. That convinces. Otherwise, it's all useless.
I want to give out the papers now, because already some really good comments have been made, and I want to retain them. So you can make... Actually, I've been taking your notes, I've been dividing them into comments and questions and dictating them in two different lists for myself for future use. So like Ganeshakti, you could write down what you were saying, and others. And then, here's pens. A lot of my pens are disappearing. I have about 12 of these. There's only one left. And here's some others. So those who haven't been here before, I'm asking you to write a question down, just like I had this question. If the proofs are weak, why do we use them? And there are other questions. So questions depend on his intelligence. It left him in a tortured situation. Okay, we got quite a few here. Of course. course, I'm not going to read them all. Wow, we're later than usual. If there is love, what is the need of logic? Boy, that's a quite a statement. If there is love, what is the need of logic? If?
Can I make a little comment on that?
All right.
This story happened in Paris. This is the devotee Guru Gauranga, I guess.
Guru Gauranga, yeah, the justice minister.
Okay, when he just joined the movement, he didn't join actually, he was in Paris temple, and he had a discussion with a devotee. And Guru Gauranga is very, he likes very much philosophy and logic.
Oh, yeah.
So I think this happened with whether Arevilas or Umavati. I think it's Arevilas. And he said, okay, if you can convince me tonight, I'll become a devotee. So they spent 8 hours. He was preached all night until Mongol Arctic. In the morning he said, well, you convinced me. And he became a devotee like that. He
by said, logic and philosophy.
Yeah, he just stayed and joined like that. So, of course, sometimes we're a little lazy and we think, well, I just accept everything. I don't want to make the effort to go through all this philosophy. But some people need this philosophy.
Yeah.
In this case, it was pretty useful.
I can comment on this, too. I remember being real surprised and hearing Prabhupada say 26 Second Avenue, that philosophy was for the atheists, he said. And that otherwise we don't need philosophy. One just loves Krishna. It was a striking phrase, philosophy is for the atheists. That's why sometimes we get kind of, you know, disgusted with, in a sense, perhaps this lecture isn't as nectarian as some of the others. But would be, like you say, that very word lazy is even used by Krishnadas Kaviraj, out of fear or laziness, if we avoid these discussions. And those Vaishnavas who say that there should be no philosophy, they're also called Sahajiyas. And we just want ecstasy. But we do both. Can I judge my spiritual master on the basis of logic and argument? What about the logic of the rope and the snake? Well, that example is one that's supposed to show that you should use faith and not logic in following the guru. What he says may not immediately be logical to you.
Prabhupada was amazed at first when he heard Bhaktisiddhanta immediately say, kill that snake. And then later he found the quote in the Shastra and understood why he said, isn't that last time?
Yeah, at first he didn't understand.
He didn't understand.
I think if you could go over the material a little slower, because most of it didn't register. In Mexico City, you may remember the question by the Sanskrit professor, why is there anything? That's like the refusal to accept the ontological first cause. Prabhupada says, everything is already there. Better you ask, where does everything come from? That was nice.
Then he said, Mohan. He said, well, actually, Mohan.
Did Prabhupada ever just ignore or tell his disciples not to preach to these nonsense persons? Yes? Some definitions go over my head. Is it possible to simplify the presentation? A couple of remarks like that. Well, I'll just say a couple more, just so you can hear them without maybe discussing them. Does one need an education in theology in order to present the arguments in Prabhupada's books. No, the arguments in Prabhupada's books are theology. In fact, I have a question. How shall we study Prabhupada's books in order to know the science of God? And I answered, there is no separate study. You just study Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and you are studying the science of God or theology. It's not necessary to understand Western theological terms or philosophy. We were just doing it as an added way to appreciate Prabhupada. Okay. Your last remark.
I think it would make a wonderful topic for a book. I think we have a lot of ecumenical type preaching to do. It would be great if the devotees knew both sides, especially as it relates to the way Prabhupada preached.
Yeah. I can remember when I was a GBC member some years ago, there was like a request that never got anywhere, that somebody write a book about Prabhupada as a philosopher or as a theologian.
He's much more thorough than dialectical spiritualism.
Yeah. Just like some scholar or follower or someone will come and write a book about him as a philosopher. So I'll end. Thank you.